When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca, joining us all the way up in the great white north of Toronto for the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies later on tonight is EJ Raddick from the NHL Network. Fresh off his call of the Panther-Blackhawk game yesterday afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I mean, let's you know, Toronto is not that far away, Don. You make it.
Oh, it's way up like, there. You know, I mean,
I'm in the North Pole.
It
was a short plane ride.
No, listen, they have a place to have your snow boots on top when you go. When you take any flight to Canada, they've got an extra compartment there for snow boots and for people that I think that there are people that have. Like they have polar bears for support animals. It's just a whole nother world up there. So you're right in the thick of it all.
Oh yeah, last night when I got in, I was walking down the street. I bumped into a couple polar bears. You know, just rolling along down Bay Avenue there, Bay Street.
So. Sure. Toronto's a great city.
It's a great city. It's a beautiful day here too, and I always love coming up for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony just because. You know, it's a special day for those people who are being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and we get to see so many different people that are connected to them through the hockey world. So, really, really good.
Yeah, and we talked about it last week. We know we're getting older when we see somebody get drafted, watch their entire career, and then go through the 3-year waiting period, and then get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And that's how I feel. With Henrik Lundqvist, not from a fan perspective, but he kind of encompasses my career in hockey with the New York Rangers. I was hired to do pre and post by MSG, his rookie season, and I literally got to see his entire career. You know, drafted in, what was it, the 7th round, like an afterthought, kind of just let's take a flyer on him. I was reading Carpi's book about how Don Maloney was just like, hey, they had taken a goalie before him. Let's just take a chance. He was highly rated out of Europe, but not a lot of expectations. His rookie year, he's backing up Kevin Weeks. And by the time that season ended, he had won a gold medal for Finland and for Sweden and ends up taking the Rangers to the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. It was just quite a start to his career, and it's just hard to believe that we got to see, you know, one of the great goaltenders in the history of this sport right before our eyes now finally going where he belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was a kind of a no-brainer, right, for Hank to go to the Hall of Fame. And you're right, I was thinking about that myself today. I was thinking about talking to one of my colleagues, Dave Reed, who is over at the NHL Network, and we're going to have coverage of the Hall of Fame throughout the evening tonight. And, you know, like Dave played, you know, against, you know, Tom Barrasso and Mike Vernon, and he played for Ken Hitchcock, and he played with the Avalanche under Pierre Lacroix, and, like, you know, he's had connections to a lot of the Hall of Fame people outside of, obviously, Karen Ouellette. But you know, he said when he got to Henrik, he goes, yeah, he's too young for me. And so, like, you know, Henrik played after Dave retired. And so Henrik has had a whole nother career, right? Like, there was a whole nother generation of players, and now here we are 3 years after his retirement, and he goes into the Hall of Fame. So you're right. It is kind of interesting for those of us who cover it, like yourself, like me, who have seen. You know, I was thinking about it yesterday when I was calling the Panthers and Hawks. I mean, we got to Connor Bedard was just off the charts in the game, had a couple of unbelievable goals. He's such a kind of a showman out there. He strikes really quickly and so much fun. And I'm like, here we are. Like, you know, I go back and remember as a kid watching, you know, Jean Beliveau at the end of his career and Bobby Orr. And I saw Gordie Howe actually play in a game and you know, and then follow it all the way through, and now I'm calling Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and you know, it just kind of reminded me of how fortunate I've been to do something that I really love, and to be around something like that for so many years. And you know, that's it. And you're right. You got to see it, Don. I mean, really up close from being around covering the Rangers closely, like the whole journey. And, you know, I guess credit Christian Rockstrom and the Rangers scouting group. I guess that was like Neil Smith's scouting group. I mean, Neil had been let go at the time, but it was his group still intact that made that decision. And, you know, it worked out. I mean, Joel Henrik's brother, his twin brother Joel, was a more highly thought of prospect than Henrik. And, you know, in the end, Henrik is the one that was the star. And it's kind of funny, two twin brothers, right? And we've seen twins, we saw the Sedins, right? But Henrik and Joel, when you look at them, I mean, they're identical twins, but yet you could see the difference. Like, Henrik, it's just something about him. There's a twinkle in the eye or the way he carries himself.
Yeah.
And Joel is kind of more of the everyman. And it's amazing to look at when you see them both. You can immediately tell which one is Henrik. So he was a special, special player, and Ranger fans, I'm sure, excited and thrilled that he's going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I'll touch on also, you know, Ken Hitchcock, who we got to know doing NHL Live. He was always a great guest. He was always very accommodating to me early in my play-by-play career whenever we were in Columbus, and he was always very generous, not only with his time to help me prepare for the game, he would have no problem, you know, listening and critiquing my effort, which I thought was pretty cool. He was really just a down-to-earth guy. And I think the best story about Ken that I can think of was how he went and coached Princeton during the lockout. Like, he just loved hockey. I guess he was with the Flyers at the time and was kind of close proximity to Princeton, but well-deserved that he's going to go in into the Hall of Fame tonight as well.
Yeah, I can remember during our NHL Live days, I think he critiqued your clothing on a couple of occasions. really, it was something that needed to be discussed. I mean, based on what I can remember. But he was quick to weigh in on that. So he had thoughts on everything that you could have. And you know, all kidding aside, I was there in Dallas when Hitch coached his first NHL game. Bob Gainey had been the general manager, and it was, you know, at that time, I remember it was kind of difficult to watch Bob Gainey have to step aside. As like this, you know, Bob Gainey is kind of like this, you know, he's a legend in hockey, really. I mean, he's this figure, you know, he doesn't say a lot, but, you know, he's certainly a presence. And to see Bob step aside when the team was struggling, and in comes Ken Hitchcock, and over the course of a couple of years there, you know, he was able to help mold that team into a Stanley Cup champion, a team that went to the Cup final twice. So got to know Hitch really well, and you know, really happy for him being inducted as well.
Yeah, Tom Barrasso goes in. Also, Pierre Turgeon, who I still think in a lot of ways, even though he's going into the Hall of Fame tonight, is underrated. Probably doesn't get talked about enough, just because he was on a bunch of different teams, but maybe not really appreciated as much as he should be.
Yeah, he's like, what do they say? He's a little bit of a compiler. He played a long time, and he put up numbers in an era where you could put up numbers a little bit more easily. But, you know, he was not part of championship teams, but he was a great player. He was a first overall pick, right, I believe, in the draft. And, you know, he had some great years. He had an unbelievable year with the Islanders, the year they made a run in 93, and then he got hurt when he was, you know, when Dale Hunter blindsided him several seconds after he scored a goal.
Yeah,
it's still one of those ones when you watch today, you still shake your head. But he was a great player, and it's nice to see that he's finally being recognized. I think there's a lot of players in that window that you could say once a Pierre Turgeon goes in. I mean, you know, there's others. You know, like Jeremy Roenick, Keith Tkachuk, and Alexander Mogilny. I mean, Roddy Brind'Amour. I mean, there's a number of guys I think that kind of slide into that window. So, but Pierre was a great player. And, you know, Tom Barrasso going in, the one thing for me about Tom Barrasso, he was not like he certainly wasn't, you know, someone that really spent a lot of time, you know, working with the media, right?
No.
So, like, he didn't have, you know, sometimes we've talked about this, right, Donnie, is that, like, you know, it does, let's face it. I mean, if people have good relationships with the media, like Henrik Lundqvist was a beloved guy, right? Like, he was a great player, but he was also, like, someone that everybody liked. And, you know, Tom Barrasso was a little bit of a different cat. And, you know, I can't speak to what kind of teammate he was, but I've heard some stories. He wasn't always the most popular guy within the group. But the bottom line is this. He was a great goalie. He went from a U.S. high school in the early 80s, which is not what it is now. And he went to the National Hockey League, and with the Buffalo Sabres was the Vezina and Calder Trophy winner in that first season. And he went on to win some cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And the thing that I remember about Tom Barrasso the most, and it doesn't get talked about enough because we talk about Ron Hextall and Marty Brodeur as puck-handling goalies, Tom Barrasso could dominate the game with his ability to handle a puck. Like, when teams would dump it in, if you weren't dumping it in with a strategic plan, he could get to it and it would be off the glass and out of the zone. And I can remember a game in particular at Madison Square Garden where he, you know, the Rangers couldn't get a sniff on the forecheck because Barrasso just kept coming out and playing the puck. So he had a great career. He did some things that were unique, and glad to see him, you know, that Tom is being honored in this way.
I don't know if you went through this as a fan. Like, I grew up a Devil fan, you grew up an Islander fan, but there were certain, like, teams that you liked for, like, a given year. And one of my favorite teams was that 89 Flame team. I caught a lot of their games. I saw their games locally, and I got completely caught up in that Game 7 against the Canucks, if you remember, when they were almost bounced out of the first round. Joel Otto scored a goal late in that first overtime, and then they ended up going and winning a cup against the Canadiens. And there's so many great players on that team. Joe Nieuwendyk and, you know, Theo Fleury and Gary Suter and Al McGinnis. Just so many great Hall of Fame caliber players. And, of course, Mike Vernon, the goaltender of that great team, the only cup the Flames ever won.
Yeah, Mike Vernon. Mike Vernon has had a great career. He's a great goalie in junior, and he comes in the National Hockey League, and he helps the Calgary Flames be successful and win a cup, and then he goes to Detroit and is part of winning the Stanley Cup there, and you can remember him, you know, getting into the mix with Patrick Waugh during those nasty Red Wing Avalanche rivalry days of the late 90s into the 2000s. So, yeah, Mike Vernon was another guy, had a long career, had a great career, won cups with multiple franchises, ran up a lot of wins. And, you know, it's funny with goalies. I mean, we get three goalies going in this year, and it's the first time in the Hall of Fame history that we've had three. And I think that they've been a little, you know, they haven't really been, they haven't caught up, I don't think, the Hall of Fame with all the goalies that maybe should be in. So I'm really happy to see these three guys. Obviously, Lundqvist was a no-brainer, but to go back and to re-litigate the case for Barrasso and Vernon and have those guys in is terrific. And you're right, Mike Vernon, I mean, he was great on that Calgary team. I remember that, I guess that was Lonnie McDonald scoring his, I think that was his final game.
Yes.
In the final against Montreal and, you know, winning the Stanley Cup that year. So, yeah, that was a great team. They did have a lot of really good players on that Calgary team. I mean, think about how many more cups the Calgary Flames organization might have won if it hadn't been for those pesky Edmonton Oilers with Gretzky and company in the 80s, because they were always kind of in the way for several teams out west. And the Flames were able to get them once in 86, and that was only with the help of a gaff by the Edmonton Oilers, Steve Smith kind of banking the puck accidentally off Grant Fuhr into his own net. But as I say, when I look back at that, that came at the 10-minute mark. The Oilers had 10 minutes left in that game to make amends. And give the Flames credit, they were able to hold on.
All right, so let's go into where we are now. And, of course, the big news over the weekend, Jay Woodcroft is let go in Edmonton. I guess not a huge surprise considering their awful start. I guess the timing was a little strange to me. He seemed to mouth the words that he was gone after the San Jose game, allowed the coach against Seattle and won that game 4-1. Chris Knobloch is going to take over, the Hartford Wolfpack coach with the Rangers, who did coach on the NHL level a couple of times when David Quinn was in COVID protocol and we were in the bubble. If you're that 56 game season, I shouldn't say the bubble, but in that COVID season, shortened season. So I guess not a surprise he was let go. Were you surprised about why he was able to coach beyond the San Jose loss?
Well, I think what happens, Donnie, is that, you know, management have these conversations, right, about what they're doing and the timing of things. And I would imagine they just felt like they, you know, maybe they were in discussion, they weren't sure, and they were willing to go forward with that road game in Seattle with Jay behind the bench. And, you know, the Oilers played very well in that game. I mean, they didn't give up a ton of shots in the game. They built a big lead early. Zach Hyman had a natural hat trick. And, you know, they went on to win. But I think the decision, you know, these kind of, I've seen this happen before with coaches. I mean, heck, you saw the whole thing play out with Bruce Boudreau last year where they basically made a decision like months earlier to let go. And
right.
then they just went on and on and on. And it was really, I mean, it was kind of sickening, to be honest with you, and something that I believe is a blemish on Jim Rutherford's record as a manager in this league, but or as a, you know, an executive in the league. But you know, they had to get do a deal with Chris. They probably had to do, you know, talk to the Rangers about having him have the opportunity, and you know, all those things take a little time. So he will make his debut on Monday evening here against the Islanders at home. They got two home games. They got Seattle coming in on a Wednesday. Then they go on a trip down to Florida, Tampa, Washington, Carolina, I think is the four-game trip. But, you know, they're showing some signs of life. I mean, surely, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid are going to be more productive as we move along here. You know, there's been talk, especially being up here in Canada for a day or so and listening to, you know, people talk about McDavid. It's like, well, he's playing through injury because he did miss a couple games. He came back. You know, I did that outdoor game against the Heritage Classic in Calgary. I thought he looked terrific in that game. And you know, but if he is playing with something, that's a challenge. But that's life as a professional athlete. Sometimes yeah. these guys have to do that. But you know, he hasn't nearly. You know, he's below a point a game, which Connor McDavid. I mean, that's a headline, right? I mean, he's 10 points in 11 games right now. He only has the 2 goals. Leon Draisaitl is kind of, you know, he's a little bit better than that at 15 points. In his 13 games, but he had a struggle in there as well. He's been scoring a bunch of games in a row. So, you know, those guys are going to get going, and they're going to have to find a way to get more out of the bottom part of their lineup, and the D is going to have to get better, and they're going to have to hope that, you know, they can run with Stuart Skinner, and he can handle a heavy workload and be the guy for them. So we'll see if all those things come together. Chris Knobloch was Connor McDavid's coach at Erie in the Ontario Hockey League as a junior player. They're certainly bringing back the band for Connor. I mean, they've got his agent, Jeff Jackson, is now the CEO of the Oilers of hockey operations there. They've brought in Chris Knobloch. They brought in Connor Brown this year, was a former junior winger, and given him an opportunity. And you know, coming back off a year being out of hockey due to injury. So, you know, I mean, the bigger picture for the Oilers is Leon Draisaitl's contract is up at the end of next season. So he can be a free agent on July 1st, 2025, and then Connor McDavid can be a free agent on July 1st, 2026. So, I mean, I think the Oilers as an organization are trying to do whatever they can to, you know, to obviously get better and try to get back to where they were the last couple of seasons when they had a really competitive team. But, you know, when you watch them, there's still some holes and some deficiencies, and with the cap issues they have, they're going to be hard to fill.
Rangers just continue to find ways to win despite keep losing players. No Fox, they continue to win. No Hedl. Igor Shesterkin's missed some games. They've now won games with 3 different goaltenders, including Louis Domingue. Now Lindgren might be out. He left the game in the third period last night in a great come-from-behind victory against Columbus, in which Alexei Lafreniere really lifted them. It's been fun to watch this team. Obviously, you can't sustain playing at this level and with these injuries, but they just continue to find ways, and just Peter Laviolette has his markings all over this team.
Yeah, I mean they have good personnel. Let's face it. I mean, when the Rangers are healthy, I mean, point to the weaknesses. I mean, they've got really good top six forwards. They have good bottom six forwards. They got a strong defense. They got one of the best goalies in the league. You know, and now the depth in goal with Jonathan Quick stepped in and played well, and now Louis Domingue has come up and played well. So, I mean, it's a strong roster, and, you know, they're getting kind of, you know, Lafreniere, he came in, we talked about him, like, you know, about 6 weeks ago, right? That it was a big year for him, and he's come in and he's played pretty well so far this year. I mean, there's always going to be people that think he could do more, and, you know, as time goes on, but, he's produced some big plays for them, and you know they got to get some of these guys back healthy. But it's nice to build up a cushion like this. I'll tell you that. I mean, ask the Edmonton Oilers, right? I mean, they're looking uphill, and they make a coaching change now, sitting there 3-9-1 with just 7 points. But you know, for the Rangers, it's been a really good start. They're sitting in first place in the in the Metro, and, you know, they got a little cushion if the boat starts to get rocking on them a little bit, as it does over the course of an 82-game season. But it's a credit to that group right now and to Peter. Peter's a veteran coach, and, you know, he's got a track record, right, Donnie, of coming in this first year and having a lot of success. So, like, this is not his first rodeo, and, you know, he knows what he expects out of his players, and so far it's been good.
Yeah, it's been just a terrific start. Islanders struggling a bit. Third period's been bad for them, too. How do you feel about them and where they stand right now? Fans chanting for Lambert to be fired. It looks like the ship isn't sinking, but just there's a feeling like something's not right there.
Well, I mean, they're a thinner group for sure, right? And they're not fast and fleet of foot up front. They've got some older veteran forwards. They still, I think, have a pretty good defense. I think their goaltenders are very strong. Maybe, you know, you have the Boston duo, and then you have Sorokin and Varlamov as a duo. I think those are probably the two best duos in the league. But, you know, there's just not enough push offensively in the game from the Islanders. And I don't think they necessarily are playing to their strengths. I mean, I think this team is built to play Barry Trotz hockey from a couple of years ago still, which is to play a defense-first type of game and to keep everybody to the outside and not try to get into, you know, a kind of a more run-and-gun game. And I think Lane Lambert has wanted to play more offensively since he got there and activated Z more, which all makes sense, but you have to understand where you're at personnel-wise, and I don't know if the Islanders have that personnel to do that. So I think, you know, it's been kind of an up-and-down start. They've had a couple of guys out of the lineup, which hurts them. You know, when Pellick misses any time, I mean, he's one of those guys that is an important piece for them. So, you know, Dobson has played well, but, you know, just not getting enough out of the forwards to this point. Anders Lee has had a really tough start. He's only had a goal and 2 points in 13 games. I mean, they need much more out of their captain. And so, you know, when I look at it, you know, for me, I just think they need to get back to a really more conservative game and try to hammer out wins that way and play to their strengths. But, you know, we'll see as time goes on. And maybe they can get a little bit more out of Wahlstrom and, you know, some of these other younger guys they have within their group. So, but they're going to need it, and, you know, it's going to be a challenge for them to make the playoff.
Hey, listen, it can turn on a dime. You know, you see what happened with the Devils with their injuries, and now they're struggling a bit. And now Pittsburgh, out of nowhere, has all of a sudden caught fire. Seemed like going out west was good for them.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they got a get-right game against San Jose where they put up a bunch of goals, right? And then they were in a good spot against against L.A. They caught L.A. on the second of a back-to-back. L.A. had played in Vegas and had a real – I mean, beating Vegas out west is an emotional win. You know, and they went into Vegas and beat them. I think they shut them out. And then the next night they came back and Pittsburgh was able to beat them. I think it was an overtime game there. And then the Penguins went in. And they had already lost to the Ducks this year. I think they were well aware of what the Ducks can do. And I think they really tightened up against the Ducks and – you know, they won a low-scoring game there as well. So, you know, I think you're right. That trip out west did them good. I think the timing of some things helped them. They found their way a little bit. Jari was out, but now he's back. And, yeah, I mean, we saw, you know, last year in the regular season, they had stretches where they were really good. And I expect them to be kind of a similar group this year where, like, they're going to have stretches where they look like, hey, you know, maybe the Penguins are competing. And then I think they're going to have other stretches for this new challenges. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, right now they're on a little bit of a heater, and they need to be. Let's face it. I mean, the chase for the playoffs is going to be challenging. I mean, there's 7 points between Carolina, second in the Metro, and Columbus at the bottom. And, you know, you just saw Columbus. I mean, they're a competitive group. I mean, they've got their challenges. So I loved Adam Fantilli after the game. I mean, he looked at me like he just said, you know, I hate losing, and we're better than this. And, like, you know, there's a young man that's trying to help turn around the culture in, you know, with that franchise. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge to make it. So for the Pittsburgh Penguins and, you know, for the Devils even, who, you know, let's face it, I mean, losing Hughes and Heischer, I mean, wow. I mean, gutting your first two centers in your team, I mean, makes such a big difference.
But they don't play any defense, and, though.
Yeah, but you knew it was going to be a bumpier ride for the Devils this year. I mean, they actually played well defensively last year. This year, they've got some younger pieces back there. It's not exactly the same. The goalies you know, are not, you know, I think they had question marks coming in the season. I think they overachieved a little bit last year. But, I mean, it's a different year. I mean, I think it was kind of to me like the Rangers, you know, or my thinking last year was the Rangers went to the conference final 2 years ago. Last year would be a bumpier ride, but I thought it would benefit them in the postseason. As it ended up, it did not. I think the Devils might be in that boat this year. They got to get Hughes and Hischier healthy, clearly. They're not going anywhere without those two guys at the front of their lineup. But I think it will be a bumpier ride in the regular season. There'll be a lot to learn for some of the younger players. I do wonder what Tommy Fitz is going to do when it comes to his goaltending. Is he going to go out and try to make a move and add a goaltender?
Yeah.
That's an easy thing to do these days. So, you know, there's some questions and there's some challenges. But, like, this is what comes with high expectations, right? At the start of the season, we talked about the Devils. There were higher expectations. They were a second-round team this year. They were a 100-point team this year. People are expecting bigger and better things. And, you know, there are bumps along the way as you try to get to that level. And so there'll be some challenges for the Devils. But you're right. They got to defend way better, giving up too many goals and playing a little too loose. I mean, they're a minus team right now. They're minus one in the standings. And, you know, that tells you they've given up a lot of goals because they've scored 48.
Right.
They've given up 49.
Yeah, kind of like Colorado. I mean, this is what's weird about the Avalanche, right? I can live with losing to the Vegas Golden Knights 7-0 because they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. I didn't see St. Louis putting up 8 in Colorado the other night.
No, I did not either. And, yeah, they got some, you know, there's some challenges there, too, because, of, you know, they have Georgiev, but they don't – they just – you know, the Pavel Francouz has had a number of injuries over the years, and now he's headed back home. He's done for the season with injury. You know, I'm not really convinced the guys behind Georgiev are going to be, you know, rock solid. They've had some other little injury issues along the way. And so, yeah, they've had, after a good start, they've had some bumps. I mean, to me, Vegas and Colorado are the two best teams, you know, that I see when they're playing well. But right now, Colorado isn't playing well, so we'll see if they can get things together. They've had a really a tough stretch where, you know, they were shut out a couple of times. They got blown out by St. Louis, so you know, there's some work to be done there. And you know, Dallas is rolling along, so they've kind of skipped ahead of them in the division.
Oh,
you know. Dallas has got a good hockey team, and they got a good goalie, and they're well coached, and they've got some really good players there, so they're a hard out as well.
8 goals against Minnesota last night, 7 of them on special teams, 5 on the power play, 2 shorthanded. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that too often, but you know, Peter DeBoer was funny after the game. He said, well, it's the same story with Minnesota. I mean, they want to run around and take penalties, and we have to make them pay on the power play, and they did. And then they also scored 2 shorthanded goals in the game. I mean, quite frankly, I think Minnesota, I mean, they're in a tough spot because, you know, they have this cap issue there with the dead money for Parisi and Suter, and so they're having to work around that. But, you know, we saw a coaching change in Edmonton. There's coaching changes when there's high expectations, right, which there were in Edmonton, and now they have a change. To me, in Minnesota, I think Dean Evason has had plenty of time to figure that thing out. I wasn't impressed with him in either of the last 2 playoff runs with his decision-making. He'd be a guy that I'd be moving on from if I were running the show there. It doesn't mean that they necessarily have a roster or they should have the expectations that other teams have, but I just think that he's run his course there for me. And, you know, if I was Billy Guerin, I'd be moving in a different direction. But I think, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, that's the plan. I don't sense that's the plan right now. But, you know, if you have too many more nights like you had last night, you know, I don't think it'll be long before they decide to make a move because, as you know, in this league, I mean, guys get moved out pretty quickly when things are going poorly and sometimes even when things are going well.
EJ, enjoy tonight. Should be a lot of fun, and we will talk to you next week.
You got it, my friend. Take care now.
All right, buddy. That's EJ Raddick. He's a very, very busy man up in Toronto for what should be a really cool ceremony, the 2023 inductions into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we mentioned that Anthony Pusick is going to be a co-host moving forward. Didn't get a chance to talk to EJ and then get all our things together, but we're going to get Anthony in the fold on Wednesday. But I wanted to get just his thoughts as somebody that's very young, that saw Henrik Lundqvist's entire career, and just wanted to get your thoughts on seeing him finally getting inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Well, look, I'm not going to get in the way of the Don LaGreca, EJ Raddick romance. That's not.
No. I want you to be involved next week. It's just that I didn't get a chance to talk to him. We didn't get a chance to go over what we were going to discuss because I'm a very busy person. But
you are a busy.
We're still on board with moving forward, starting on Wednesday. But what do you think about Hank tonight?
Well, look, in regards to Hank, I mean, I covered him for 1 year when I covered the team back in college. But of course, I watched him for my entire childhood, basically. I probably really got into hockey after the lockout in 2003-2004. Lundqvist was a big part of pretty much every team once he got drafted. And it started the turnaround of this franchise from being in the dregs in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, to being a perennial playoff team and cup contender and winning the East 1 year. I mean, he was one of the greatest goalies that I've ever seen. I mean, I, of course, saw the back end of Marty Brodeur's career. But in terms of Rangers goaltenders, you could argue that Henrik Lundqvist is the best ever. Getting his number retired in the Garden was emotional, too. But to see him get the Hockey Hall of Fame, I know that he would have loved to get a cup. Not his fault that they didn't, or that he didn't, I should say. But it's pretty special. It's pretty cool, and it also makes me feel kind of old.
Listen, I know that we define everything by championships, but the one thing that he can be really proud of is he completely turned a franchise around. Coming out of that lockout, the Rangers were not in a good space at all. Had a lot of bad contracts, had a lot of just the bad vibes around the team, and coming out of the lockout looked like it was going to continue for the foreseeable future. And the reason it turned around as quickly as it did and as efficiently as it did is because of the play of Hank. And I go back to a conversation that I had with Steve Young years ago, talking football, and he would say, you know, for a team that's supposed to exceed expectations, who is somebody you're not thinking of at the beginning of the year that by the end of the year people are buying his jersey? And that 05-06 season, that was Lundqvist. He was backing up Kevin Weeks. There wasn't a lot of expectations. Looks like Jarger was on his way out, although he proved that he still had another decade of hockey left. But, Peter Peruka had a really great start to the season that year, and they surprised a lot of people. Of course, so much made of Merrick Malik's goal in the shootout against the Washington Capitals. There were a lot of other great moments and a lot of other great performances, but Hank was the difference. And to show that it was no fluke, they go to the playoffs the next year, they sweep the Atlanta Thrashers, get to the second round, and then you started to see slowly but surely that they were starting to build towards something. And you're right, he did not win a cup, but it was not his fault. He did everything that he could, got them to a Stanley Cup final, won them a President's Trophy, three appearances in the conference final. Just a tremendous, tremendous career. I know Barrasso's got a couple of cups. I know Vernon's got a cup that's going to go in with him. But the better of the three goaltenders to me was Henrik Lundqvist, one of the great goaltenders that I've ever seen. But unfortunately, like quarterbacks in the NFL, they get judged by their rings. But he was beyond that, and he put the Rangers back on the map. And now you've got, speaking of Steve Young, you almost got like a Montana to Young, Manning to Luck situation with going from Lundqvist to Igor Shesterkin. But should be a fun night in Toronto, so EJ will be on the coverage for that. Two games tonight, 8:30. The Islanders will be at the Oilers, two struggling teams. We'll see if Chris Knobloch can get his fingerprints on this Oilers team to try to win two in a row. And probably not the greatest of time to go out to Western Canada for the Islanders, but they are 5-5-3, 3-5-2 over the last 10. And at 10 o'clock, the Avalanche, after getting beat up by St. Louis, will be in Seattle to take on the Kraken. Avalanche, after the quick start, 5-5 in their last 10. Kraken 4-4-2 in their last 10. So very average hockey for those two. But just two games tonight. A lot of people are going to be talking about the ceremony. We'll reconvene on Wednesday, myself and Anthony Pusick. Dive into your tweets at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. We'll gather all those up. So enjoy the hockey. Anthony, we'll try this again on Wednesday.
Sounds good to me.
All right, this was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.